Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for being here. I hope your health is solid these days and that your life is going well. So many things swirling through my mind right now these days. As we continue with this Gosho, Nichiren is going to dig into this idea of debts of gratitude from a standpoint of the teachings. But really, it applies to everything, but certainly Nichiren's focus is here on Buddhism and the practice of Buddhism. And right now, he's in the midst of a great deal of Japan's own experience. And he goes back into China and India and China. He goes through the whole breadth of the Buddhist transmission histories and so forth. But his focus is on Japan at the moment. And he demonstrates where things can go astray. They can go astray in the midst, even though we all study the same thing. Some can extrapolate to their own satisfaction and ego ways of interpreting the same thing. And so this is how deviations and derivations can start and do start. And if we don't feel a sense of, I would say, a deep sense of appreciation for that which we are studying and therefore learning from, then our ego can come into play, oftentimes acting as a sort of a competitor to what we're learning and trying. And it's really a samsaric thing with our human condition. If we allow ourselves to, I don't know, there are words I can use that will right away put up walls of resistance in us, right? That's how we work. And so we won't hear what we need to hear. And I think without, and just explaining that, I think that happens a lot when, within scholarship, if you're really motivated by study and scholarship, sometimes what you read becomes a sort of a challenge to see if you can't understand it differently or inculcate it in a way where you think I know what this means, instead of really allowing yourself to immerse yourself in what the meaning might be outside of your brilliant assumptions, right? I know that sounds rude, but the mind works this way, and it can confuse things. And so it takes a great deal of study and restudy. How many times I've reread certain sutras, and every time I come away with either a more profound understanding, or sometimes, quite often, a new insight that on the first or second reading, it didn't jump out at me. And that's my own evolution. That's our human mind needs to kind of stew on things for a while. And so I really get a lot out of and feel rewarded by meditation with the mandala, simply because it allows me to spend time to let my human mind gel a little bit, settle a little bit. And by chanting to my Buddha nature, those little boundaries, those little stuck moments in my human mind, they melt a little bit. They sometimes melt a lot, and I get a pop of insight. But this is the benefit of connecting with our Buddha nature, is that without our consciously being able to manipulate that and figure it out, our Buddha nature is able to find those weird blockages, it might be a way to say it, our stuck moments in our synapses and our minds and our brains, that they obfuscate, they get in the way of a more profound understanding. Anyway, upon rereading this part of the Sko Show, it seems like Nichiren is exploring this very facet in the deviations of Dengyo's teachings and how this has historically happened before in Buddhism. So, without further blah, 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 let's get to it. So, we restart the Go Show here as Nichiren says, the Tripitaka master, Huan Sang, and had been to India and seen a copy of the great commentary on the Abhidharma there. But that did not prevent him from being criticized by the Dharma teacher Fa Bao, who had never been to India. The Tripitaka master, Dharmaraksha, saw a copy of the Lotus Sutra in India, but that did not prevent a man of China from pointing out that the entrustment chapter was out of place in the translation he made of it, though that man had never seen the original text. It's an interesting comment on how people build their own truths, and sometimes that's the gotcha that gets in the way of real understanding, right? In like manner, he goes on, though Jikaku may have studied under the great teacher Dengyo and received instruction from him, and though Chisho may have obtained the oral transmission from Reverend Gishin, if they go against the teachings recorded in the authentic writings of Dengyo and Gishin, then how can they help but incur suspicion? And, you know, this is to say that they should be treated critically because they're not truly digging into the meaning and scholarship in the way that it was taught to them by masters. They are assuming their own reading to be superior, and so that should be questioned. Is there a good reason for that? How do you account for that? Where can you show fault or flaw in the previous teaching that you now teach it this way? And this is the scholarship of Buddhism, right? So Nichiren is pointing out how these particular gentlemen, Jikaku and Chisho, both deviated from what they were taught without justification, and this is why they're easily shown at fault in debates, because they simply aren't holding to the scholarship. They're just deciding on their own to deviate in ways that serve themselves. Clarification of the schools by the great teacher Dengyo is the most secret of his writings. Secret not in that nobody gets to know about it, but the deepest, most profound teachings of his teaching career. In other words, those would be the teachings he most valued as his tools to induct other disciples and practitioners of Buddhism as teachers to instruct them. And so these are critical and the most important, right? So that's what he means by secret writings. In the preface to that work, he writes, quote, the true word school of Buddhism that has recently been brought to Japan deliberately obscures how its transmission was falsified in the recording by Yi Xing, who was deceived by Shan Wu Wei. While the Flower Garland Sutra was introduced earlier, attempts to disguise the fact that it was influenced by the doctrines of Tendai. The Three Treatises school, which is so infatuated with the concept of emptiness, has forgotten Qi Xiang's humiliation and conceals the fact that he was completely won over to the Tendai teachings by Chang'an. The Dharma Characteristic schools, which clings to the concept of being, denies that its leader, Qi Chou, was converted to the teachings of the Tendai school, and that Liang Pi used those teachings in interpreting the Benevolent King's Sutra. Now, with all due circumspection, I have written Clarification of the Schools in one volume to present to wise men of latter times who share my convictions. The time is the reign of the 52nd sovereign of Japan, the 7th year of the Kōnin era, 816, the year Hinoesaru. So these are Dengyo's words. And so, as you can see, Nichiren is not presenting new information here. He's saying Dengyo clarified all this to the nth degree. He made these teachings, again, as I said, secret. He says these teachings are for wise men to contemplate the situation. See, secret, not meaning especially maybe critical and scholarly. In other words, the kind of teachings that we don't just distribute amongst the masses because it would confuse and cause disruption in the transmission of Buddhist methodology and thinking. But for we instructors of Buddhism, the holders of the lineage of Buddhism, the instructors and the teachers and the inductors of future teachers, we must know these deep and important scholarships throughout the lineage of Buddhism. It's already been done for us. It's already been proven for us. And we need to study it, not only for its perspicacity, right, but also as a source of information, but also for us to analyze and gain those insights, or gain insights that show us where further research is needed, right? So this is the nature of scholastic, of any subject, but certainly of Buddhism. Okay, so Nichiren continues. Farther on, in the main text of the same work, it reads, quote, "There was an eminent monk in India who had heard that the teachings of the monk Tendai of Tang, China, were most suitable for distinguishing correct from incorrect doctrines, and expressed a longing to become better acquainted with them." This is the right volition, the right ichinen, right? It continues, quote, "Does this not mean that Buddhism has been lost in India, the country of its origin, and must now be sought in the surrounding regions? But even in China, there are few people who recognize the greatness of Tendai's teachings. They are like the people of Lu," which is a historical cultural story. And this is human behavior. We're often overwhelmed unknowingly by the conditions we're in, and that, I won't say prohibits us, although it does, it creates an additional obstacle to seeing clearly what is happening, right? Influences that are more close to us in our environment tend to get more of our attention rather than what we would say the big picture, right? "This work," as this is Nichiren now, "this work, as may be seen from these quotations, criticizes the Dharma characteristics, three treatises, Flower Garland, and True Word Schools. Now, if the great teacher Dengyo believed that the Tendai and True Word Schools are of equal worth, then why would he criticize the latter?" Obvious statement, right? "Furthermore, he compares the Tripitaka master Pu Kung and others to the ignorant people of the state of Lu. If he really approved of the True Word teachings as formulated by Shan Wu Wei, Qin Kang Chi, and Pu Kung, then why would he speak ill of these men while comparing them to the people of Lu? And if the True Word teachings of India were identical with or superior to the teachings of Tendai school, then why did the eminent monk of India question Pu Kung about them and say that the correct teaching had been lost in India?" And this is a fact of history, right? This, so it's criticized and critical in the Buddhist order, but it's also as a historical fact that India was lost, Buddhism was lost in India. They actually some powerful rulers banned it from practice. Be that as it may, Nichiren continues, these two men, Jikaku and Chisho, in words claimed to be the disciples of the great teacher Dengyo, but at heart they were not, which is what I was saying earlier. Constantly, Nichiren is demonstrating that study is important, but study is important if we understand our debt of gratitude to what we're studying. If we don't, then we can take what we're studying as a tool to explore our own avarice, our own greed, our own desires, for whatever, for our position, for our greatness, for so on and so forth, right? We need, I hate to use the word humble because it's well overused, I'm sure you're aware, but there's a certain amount of humility to scholarship. To that doesn't make you a lesser person. What it means is that you're more open to new suggestions, new ways of understanding what you think you know. Isn't that the whole ball of wax right there? Samsara is a condition of us always thinking we know. But the truth of life and its process is that knowing is an experiential, constantly changing thing. And that can be unsettling. So it's no wonder human beings, we tend to gravitate to what we think we know, right? Having security that's more profound than that, in that the life process does what it does, and that we can get on that train, if you will. There's a lot of confidence that comes from that, but it's a confidence born of a little bit of letting go. And what we're letting go of is our ego, to put it simply. So let's continue. That is why Dengyo wrote in the preface to his work, quote, "Now with all due circumspection, humility, I have written clarification of the schools in one volume to present to the wise men of later times who share my convictions," end quote. So there it is. This is an important consideration of the matters at hand, that those who are also circumspect, who are in, and that makes, this is a definition of wisdom, if you will, that wisdom isn't about knowing, it's about finding out. It's about understanding the big picture. Nichiren says, the words, quote, "who share my convictions," end quote, mean, in effect, those who share my conviction that the true word school is inferior to the Tendai school. At least that's one of the points, right? In the edict quoted earlier with Chisho himself, which Chisho himself had requested, it says that they, quote, "do nothing but turn against the teachings of the patriarch Dengyo and instead follow the prejudices and inclinations of their own hearts," end quote. It also states, quote, "on the path inherited from the master, one cannot neglect either the concentration and insight or the true word teachings," end quote. But if we are to accept the words of this edict, we would have to say that Jikaku and Chisho themselves are the ones who have turned against the teacher Dengyo, right? They flipped it around. It may be impertinent that I make charges of this kind, but if I do not do so, then the relative merit of the Mahavacharya and Lotus Sutras will continue to be misunderstood, as it is at present. That is why I risk my life to bring these charges. And this is, isn't this Nichiren? Nichiren sees a wrong when he can argue logically with scholarship. It's easy to see where things go awry. And where they go awry, Nichiren is sure to point the finger. Even though he actually risks his life. Remember, this is shogunate Japan, where disputes are settled by death, by powerful people who don't want to hear what you have to say. So, talk about humble. I mean, I feel in some ways so insignificant in the light of Nichiren's courage. But I also feel very inspired that insights are insights. And so I long for more insight. I've had great insights in the past. And I thank Nichiren and all my teachers, you included, when you make comments and ask questions that I sometimes, they may seem a little uncomfortable when people ask questions about Buddhism, where you've taken something as rote, which is what we do as humans. We get into habits and we just start repeating those habits, and we wrestle with whether or not they're actually of value to us, if they work, or we just blindly accept that sooner or later they will. And then somebody pops up and says, well, what's this about? And our first reaction may be to recoil and go, how can you question? Well, that's because somewhere in our minds, we're having doubts we just don't want to address. And so it's helpful when somebody asks you a question that seems difficult, or it may mean that you need to withdraw and say, okay, give me a little time to answer that, because I need to, you know, reinvestigate for myself how I got here. Guaranteed you will get new insights from doing that. So this is how people in our environment are our teachers. This is how the Sangha works, right? So don't feel that every question you're asked as a Buddhist, and those you ask yourself, need to be neatly packaged and already, you know, answered and known. Our whole practice of Buddhism is about digging deeper than mere repetition and knowing. It's about wisdom. It's about insight. So take those questions that seem maybe a little harsh at first, and just understand that everyone is our teacher. So maybe we need to look again at something we've taken for granted. Oh, I know that. That's this, 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 this. Well, when somebody asks you again about it, and you want to bark back at them or shut down or however you respond to that, use it as an opportunity to go and refamiliarize yourself. Maybe look for some sutras or some commentaries that you haven't previously read, and search for that specific subject. There's all kinds of ways, but certainly when people ask tough questions, it's a strong indicator that you're ready to answer them at a deeper level than you have thus far. So that's your opportunity, right? To gain deeper resolve, more meaning, greater insights. Develop your Buddha wisdom. Stay in your Buddha mindset longer in this life. Let's continue. Since they themselves were mistaken, it is altogether natural that these two men, Jikaku and Chisho, did not venture to accuse the great teacher Kobo of doctrinal error. Instead of wasting all those supplies and making work for other people by insisting upon traveling all the way to China, they should have made a more careful and thorough study of the doctrines of the great teacher Dengyo, who was their own teacher. There's the debt of gratitude again. They take for granted their teacher and his commentaries, and thinking that, you know, they need to forge their own path and they know better, because they're them. They get sponsored trips to China and go do research and talk to different teachers. Even stories of going to India. And really, they're denying that all of this research has already been done. Their own teacher investigated all of this and has a tremendous amount of information and scholarship that they could study without having to travel, excuse me, to travel to a foreign country and reinvent the wheel, as it were. Had they done so, they would have been clarified. But they didn't pay that debt of gratitude. Instead, they went for their own gratitude, avarice, greed. They wanted it for themselves, right? Since it's an odd way to think, but we do it all the time, we humans, right? It's ego, ego. All right. It was only in the time of the first three leaders of the Tendai school, the great teacher Dengyo, the Reverend Gishin, and the great teacher Encho, that the correct doctrine was taught on Mount Hiei. Thereafter, the chief monk of the Tendai school were transformed into true word teachers. How lamentable is that? They've got all the documents available to them. How did they get swayed by this outside opinion? I would wager to guess that it had a lot to do with the ruling class, because they're intertwined, right? And it's about funding, and it's about being popular and being the authority. That old dragon. The area continued to be called the Tendai Mountain, but was preceded over by your true word master. So that really pollutes it for the masses, doesn't it? Because if you're not one of the on high monks, the leaders, the abbot of certain temples, and the leaders supported by the elite, you may think, oh, I'm still practicing with the Tendai temple, but it was Tendai only by name. It had been taken over by these teachers of the true word school. So you might think, well, I'm practicing Tendai school and we just have to do these mudras and mantras now. You would be mistaken. That's not Tendai or Tendai in Japan school. So you would be mistaken and fooled into believing that you were a follower of Dengyo, when in fact his teachings have been sequestered and overtaken by these people, Jigaku and Chisho, who for their own power, influence, political gains, shift the teachings away from the Lotus Sutra to this more magical, more fanciful Mahavacharana Sutra. And not just the sutra, their own additions and so forth. The great teachers, Chikaku and Chisho, as we have seen, contradict the passages in the Lotus Sutra concerning all the sutras that the Buddha, quote, has preached, now preaches, and will preach, end quote. And having contradicted that passage of the teachings, are they not to be regarded as the arch enemies of Shakyamuni, many treasures, and the Buddhas of the Ten Directions, which includes you and I? One might have thought that the great teacher Kobo was the foremost slanderer of the law, but Chikaku and Chisho taught errors that far surpassed those of Kobo. Because they're just piling on top of it, right? When an error is as far from the truth as water is from fire or the earth from the sky, people will refuse to believe it. And such errors will have no chance of acceptance. Thus, for example, the doctrines of the great teacher Kobo are so full of such errors that even his own disciples would not accept them. As for the practices and ceremonies of the school, they accepted his instructions, but they could not bring themselves to accept his doctrines concerning the relative merits of the sutras. Therefore, they substituted for them the doctrines of Shan Wu Wei, Ching Kang Chi, and Pu Kung, Chikaku, and Chisho. It is the doctrine of Chikaku and Chisho that declares that the true word and Tendai schools are identical in principle, and all the people have accepted that declaration. They made a smooth transition from what is scholarship to what is politic. And it is political. That's how politics work. Look, it's the same thing. So do this. Why do I need to do that if it's the same thing? Let me do what has always worked. Why do we need to slide over to your interpretation? Because it's the same thing, then why are you offering it? And nobody questions that. They just go along. Recognizing this situation, even followers of the Tendai school, hoping to be asked to perform the eye-opening ceremony for the consecration of painted or wooden Buddhist images, adopt the mudras and mantras in which the True Word School is believed to excel. There it is. Let's get some mysticism and magic in here, and everyone will go, ooh, that'll work because I can do that. It's easy. Thus, in effect, the whole of Japan goes over to the True Word School, and the Tendai School is left without a single follower. Although, they don't really realize that because these crafty politicians have just slid it over and let it be known through the same name, in name only, without teaching the more profound scholarship. They're the ones in charge of scholarship. See, whenever you have this authoritarian structure, it breaks the lineage of understanding and insight. I mean, this goes back to Shakyamuni himself. This is why he was persecuted so much when he first brought out Buddhism. Because Buddhism teaches that you are the authority, only you. And that in your authority, by sharing that capacity for others to also be their own authority, is very, very counter political aims of hierarchies and authoritarianship. And authoritarians, they don't like to be knocked down from their pedestal, their self-created pedestal. You know? We'll go a little further here. A monk and a nun, a black object and a dark blue object, are so easily confused that a person with poor eyesight might well mistake one for the other. But a priest and a layman, a monk and a layman, or a white object and a red object, even a person with poor eyesight would never confuse, much less someone with good eyes. Now the doctrines of Chikaku and Chishu are as easy to mistake for the truth as a monk is for a nun, or a black object for a dark blue one. Therefore, even wise men are led astray, and the ignorant fall into error. As a result, for the past 400 years and more, on Mount Hiei, at Onjoji and Toji in Nara, the five provinces surrounding the capital, the seven outlying regions, and indeed throughout the whole land of Japan, all the people have been turned into slanderers of the law. That's very sad when you consider that, as I said earlier, the vast majority of them are just trying to practice correctly. They don't know. Leadership is an important thing, especially in a hierarchical, authoritarian world. In the fifth volume of the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha states, quote, Manjushri, this Lotus Sutra is the secret storehouse of the Buddhas, the thus come ones. Among the sutras, it holds the highest place, end quote. If this passage of the scripture is to be believed, then the Lotus Sutra must represent the correct teaching that dwells supreme above the Mahavarachana and all the numerous other sutras. How then, one wonders, would Shan Wu Wei, Chikang Chi, Pu Kung, Kobo, Chikaku, and Chisho interpret this passage in the sutra and reconcile it with their beliefs? It's obvious they're incorrect, right? Again, the seventh volume of the Lotus Sutra states, quote, a person who can accept and uphold this sutra is likewise foremost among all living beings, end quote. How encouraging that is for us now studying, right? This is Nichiren scholarship. If this passage of the sutra is to be believed, then the votary of the Lotus Sutra must be like the great sea as compared to the various rivers and streams like Mount Sumeru among the host of mountains. like the deity of the moon amid the multitude of stars, like the great deity of the sun amid the other shining lights, like the wheel-turning kings, like the Lord Chakra, and like the great King Brahma among all various heavenly kings. So this is speaking to you and I. If we are votaries of the Lotus Sutra, if we uphold Myoho Renge Kyo, and we influence others toward building that Buddha nature in themselves, we are votaries of the Lotus Sutra. We are like the sun and moon. We are like King Chakra. We are like Mount Sumeru among all the mountains. We are like the great ocean rather than streams and tributaries. The great teacher Dengyo, in his work entitled The Outstanding Principles of the Lotus Sutra, writes, "This sutra likewise is foremost among all the sutra teachings." A person who can accept and uphold this sutra is likewise foremost among all living beings. End quote. After quoting this passage from the Lotus Sutra, Dengyo notes a passage from the work entitled The Profound Meaning of the Lotus Sutra by Tendai that interprets the same passage of scripture and explains its meanings as follows. Quote, "One should understand that the sutras on which the other schools base their teachings are not foremost among the sutras. And those people who can uphold such sutras are not foremost among the multitude. But the Lotus Sutra, which is upheld by the Tendai Lotus School, is the foremost of all the sutras, and therefore those who can uphold the Lotus are foremost among living beings. This is borne out by the words of the Buddha himself. How could it be mere self-praise?" End quote. Later in the work just mentioned, Dengyo says, quote, "Detailed explanations concerning how the various schools base their teachings upon the Tendai doctrine are given in a separate work," end quote. Clarification of the schools, referred to as the separate work, states, quote, "Now the founder of our school, the great teacher Tendai, preached the Lotus Sutra and interpreted the Lotus Sutra in a way that placed him far above the crowd. In all of China, he stood alone. One should clearly understand that he was a messenger of the Thus Come One. Those who praise him will receive blessings that will pile up as high as Mount Calm and bright, while those who slander him will be committing a fault that will condemn them to the hell of incessant suffering." In other words, they'll be, what's a good word here? They'll be more than diminishing. They'll be putting themselves on a path, their life path, against their own enlightenment. It's that simple. Because if they're not working toward their enlightenment, even though they say they are, think they are, they're actually enforcing their samsaric life of attachment and sufferings. If we go by the Lotus Sutra and the interpretations of it put forward by Tendai, Miao Lo, and Dengyo, then in Japan, at the present time, there's not a single votary of the Lotus Sutra other than himself. In India, when Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings, was preaching the Lotus Sutra, as described in the Treasure Tower chapter, he summoned all the various Buddhas and had them take their seats upon the ground. Only the Thus Come One, Mahavarachana, was seated within the treasure tower on the lower seat to the south, while Shakyamuni Buddha was seated on the upper seat to the north. It's well described in the documentation of the Lotus Sutra, but once again, I have to remind all of us that though the Lotus Sutra is obviously the king of sutras, the ultimate teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, all of this kind of knowledge comes from the study of the other sutras and commentaries. They all lead to this understanding, and it becomes very obvious then when one reads the Lotus Sutra how everything is put into order. Right? So when Shakyamuni talks about Mahavacharana in the Lotus Sutra. He doesn't bother to recite the entire Mahavacharana Sutra. He just calls it out and puts it in its proper place. So if you know nothing of the Mahavacharana Sutra, then you might gloss over that and not. And then when you hear other things about True Word School and their talk of Mahavacharana, you might think, oh, I missed something. The Mahavacharana must be more important than I thought. Then you would have missed the entire meaning of Shakyamuni placing Mahavacharana lower than himself, lower than the lotus. See, this is why I say the Lotus Sutra is extremely important to learn and practice. That's contained in the chant Myoho Rengekyo. Namu, I dedicate myself, resolve myself to Myoho Rengekyo. But if you truly want to understand the depth of that practice and what you're doing, what you're invoking, your Buddha nature, if you need more scholarship around that, if you have doubts about that, then study the other sutras, but they'll always bring you back to the lotus. Even if it takes a while, at some point, I can't tell you how many times I've read other sutras or commentaries and so these little light bulbs go off in my mind. Oh, that's why that's mentioned in the Lotus Sutra. Then I'll run over to one of my many different translations of the Lotus Sutra and I'll look, and there it is, there it is, there it is. But I wouldn't have known to recognize it had I not studied outside of it. And so Shakyamuni's words ring true in my head once again. Study all of Buddhist scholarship. And still recognizing that everything leads to the lotus. It just does. This thus come one, Mahavacharana, is the master of the Mahavacharana of the womb realm, described in the Mahavacharana Sutra, and of the Mahavacharana of the diamond realm, described in the Diamond Crown Sutra. This Mahavacharana, or Many Treasures Buddha, he goes by that name too, who has as his vassals the thus come one Mahavacharana of the two realms just mentioned, is in turn surpassed by Shakyamuni Buddha, the lord of the teachings, who sits in the seat above him. This Shakyamuni Buddha is a true practitioner of the Lotus Sutra. Such was the situation in India. In China, in the time of Qin Emperor Shu Pao, the great teacher Tendai defeated in debate the Buddhist leaders of the north and south of China and was honored with the title of the great teacher while still alive. It wasn't a posthumous proclamation, like a lot of these things are. As Dengyo says of him, he was, quote, far above the crowd in all of China. He stood alone, end quote. In Japan, the great teacher Dengyo defeated in debate the leaders of the six schools and became the country's first and foremost great teacher, the great teacher Kompon. That's Dengyo. In India, China, and Japan, these three persons alone, Shakyamuni, Tendai, and Dengyo, were what the Lotus Sutra calls, quote, foremost among all living beings, end quote. Thus, Outstanding Principles states, quote, Shakyamuni taught that the shallow is easy to embrace, but the profound is difficult. To discard the shallow and seek the profound is the way of a person of courage. The great teacher Tendai trusted and obeyed Shakyamuni and worked to uphold the Lotus School, spreading its teachings throughout China. We of Mount Hiei inherited the doctrine from Tendai and worked to uphold the Lotus School and to disseminate its teachings throughout Japan, end quote. In the 1800 years or more since the passing of the Buddha, there has been only one votary of the Lotus Sutra in China and one in Japan. If Shakyamuni Buddha himself is added to the number, that makes a total of three persons. The secular classics of China claim that a sage will appear once every 1,000 years, and a worthy once every 500. In the Yellow River, where the Qing and Wei rivers flow into it, the flow of the two tributary rivers remains separate. But it is said that once every 500 years, one side of the river will flow clear, and once every 1,000 years, both sides of the river will flow clear. In the same way, sages and worthies appeared at fixed intervals. In Japan, as we have seen, only on Mount Hiei, in the time of the great teacher Dengyo, was there a votary of the Lotus Sutra. Dengyo was succeeded by Gishin and Encho, the first and second chief monks of the school, respectively. But only the first chief priest or monk, Gishin, followed the ways of the great teacher Dengyo. The second priest or monk, chief monk, abbot, Encho, was half a disciple of Dengyo and half a disciple of Kobo. This is where things went awry. The third chief monk, the great teacher Jikaku, at first acted like a disciple of the great teacher Dengyo, but after he went to China at the age of 40, though he continued to call himself a disciple of Dengyo and went through the motions of carrying on Dengyo's line, he taught a kind of Buddhism that was wholly unworthy of a true disciple of Dengyo. Only in the matter of the precepts of perfect and immediate enlightenment established by Dengyo did he conduct himself like a true disciple. I guess I should stop here, yeah. So, I hope you're getting the overarching message here, is that, yes, we have to study, we have to gain our own insights. This is how we solidify our resolve in our practice, and that solidification makes us more adept, more insightful, more wise as to the development or our awakening, our embracing our Buddha nature, pushing it into this samsaric reality that needs to be cleared out of the way so that we can see true benefits of this life process and less attached and distinct and categorizing about our human existence. We need to celebrate it rather than dissect it. Dissecting it is our disease of attachment and ego and making permanent. Stop dissecting. It's a simple practice. Clear the way. Clear the way. All right. This is a meaty go show. And I hope it makes sense. If there's anything that doesn't, maybe I said it incorrectly. Maybe my words mean different things to you than they do to me. This is the human condition, right? So the only way I can know or address that is for you to help me figure out what I'm saying and maybe dig deeper for myself. An understanding that will spawn clearer language. That's what my whole goal is with this endeavor, these podcasts and these videos, is to try to take away the confusing nature of old dialogues and translations. This is what we all need to do, is to get to the core, the actual usable meaning behind all of these words. So only way I can do that, other than for myself, is for you to ask questions, for you to make comments. If it helps you, great. I love hearing how many of you, and you do, let me know how much you get out of these videos and these podcasts. Thank you so much for that. It keeps me going a lot of the time. But also, some of you email me directly at tlksylvain@gmail.com. That's great, because we can delve into things there in a more private way. And if that's more encouraging to you, then please do that. Anything to keep our sangha alive, to keep our questions going, so we can resolve doubt, so we can deepen our resolve. That's why we're practicing Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. Thank you, as always, for your support. All of you that are continue to join or subscribe, I should say, to this channel. Thank you. I'm hoping one day we'll get to 1,000 so that I can start to renegotiate with YouTube on getting some monetization for this channel, which they took away abruptly a few years ago. A lot of people complained about that. Just any way I can find to keep supporting doing this. Anyway, don't want to get into a fundraiser here, but thank you. Thank you for what you're doing, and keep your practice strong. Be good to yourself. Keep your health strong as well. And I'll see you in the next one. I guarantee it. Bye for now. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.